Welcome to today's edition, this edition of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice. I'm Tom Rainer. I am joined by Sam Rainer, the president of Church Answers, and we are here to talk about confidentiality. And we hear a lot about what should we keep confidential, what do we have to not keep confidential, to put it on the negative. And there's a lot of things in here, so just stay tuned. You're going to be hearing a lot of information that I think is going to be vitally important to the life of a pastor, a church staff member, an elder, or a lay leader. Let's talk confidentiality. Let me see if I can say that word well.
It's a hard word to say, and it's a tough thing to keep to discern.
Good segue.
Yeah, this is one of my biggest struggles as a pastor in terms of leadership. When do you keep confidence? When do you not keep confidence? And you may say, well, that's easy. If somebody tells you something private, you don't repeat it. And generally, yes, that's a very good way to go. Don't go around airing other people's dirty laundry or the things that they don't want you to say. Don't use information as leverage. Don't say you know something private and use that as a means of getting your way. I mean, there's a lot of common sense when it comes to confidentiality, but it's also not as easy as we may think, because when you get into people's lives, everything is connected, and there's a lot of messes, and sometimes messes need to be made public. So how do we handle this? How do we keep confidentiality with church members? I will come right out of the gate. I think this needs to be our first bullet point. It involves abuse. You always report abuse, no exceptions, period, full stop. If you know of or suspect any sort of abuse, you report it. There's no confidentiality there. People don't get to say, well, I'm going to tell you something, don't do anything about this. And if it involves abuse of any sort, it gets reported.
Well, I remember in my first full-time pastorate, one of your favorite places to live that gave you a love for Southwest Florida, St. Petersburg, Florida, one of my early days was a wife and a kid coming to me together and telling me the story about how the husband and dad was beating them up. Hmm. Now, we're talking 1988, Sam, so, you know, understand the context. I called I don't know if she was a counselor, psychiatrist, I don't know what, therapist, I just don't know, but I knew that she was someone that could give me a good answer. And in 1988, she said, you have to report it.
Yeah, that's good advice. Yeah, and that would have, it wasn't as common to report things 20, 30, 40 years ago. So that was excellent advice given to you. And it's just a hard rule that we have amongst our staff. You may ask, you can ask it, well, am I a required reporter or not? It doesn't matter. I don't care I don't care what your local laws are in terms of are pastors, you know, required to report things or not. You just always report it. To me, it's irrelevant whether you're required to or not. You should, period. So we've had to do that in our own church. We've had a few cases that we've had to report. I won't get into the details of those cases, sure. But I would say maybe half a dozen times, in my 5-year tenure here at West Bradenton, we've had to report some things. And, thankfully most of those ended up turning out okay. Even the cases where, there was abuse, help was given and help was received. So that's why you report it, so that, the right people can come in and do the right things.
Mine had a good story. It didn't start off well. It started off with a lot of anger, especially from the mom, the wife, who said, I thought it would be confidential. I had no idea. And so they left the church for a season, but they ended up coming back. And I don't know how true this is, but she said, what you did saved our lives. So,
yeah, I mean, it very well could be, particularly in a case of physical abuse. Those things tend to escalate. So yep. She might have been talking about her actual death, but in terms of saving a life, it can also mean a quality of life as well. She was not living a quality of life in that kind of home.
Let's go to the second point. Someone comes in for counseling, or they're just stopping by, and they say, Sam, I want to talk to you about something, but I got to get you to promise that you're not going to say a word about it. You have to give me your word that it's totally confidential. How do you handle that?
Be very careful. It depends. Classic Rainer answer, right?
Yes.
So if it's somebody I trust and somebody I know well, I might say, well, I'll do my best. If it's somebody that I don't know at all, and this is brand new information, I will always say, I need to know what this is first before I can promise confidentiality. Red flags go up all over the place when somebody says, I want to tell you something, but you must promise confidentiality first. You know, the motive comes into play, right? And you can't know somebody's motive, but you have all sorts of questions about why would you do that? So I would just say, be very careful when someone makes you promise confidentiality before telling you something. Red flags need to go up.
I do know of some examples where a man was in a mentoring relationship with a college student, and it was going swimmingly. And then the college student said something that raised a red flag. And in the context of that mentoring relationship, he said, oh, we got to do something about this. I'm not going to give any more details, but he said, we have to do something about this. And it ended the mentoring relationship, but it potentially someone was in danger as a result of what he said. So, but before I forget it, have you ever looked at radical mentoring as a mentoring? It's really, really a great way for this type of one-on-one or one-on-few mentoring. And so I happen to think about that. We can put it in the show notes. If you really want to see some good information on mentoring, look at radical mentoring. But back to my story, that was a relationship. I don't remember how many months he had been mentoring this young college man, but it had been several months. And then something came up and bang, he had to report it. And it's very similar to what you said in number one.
Yeah. And I'd also say that I've encountered a situation with a staff person previously. So this is not, I want to be very clear, it's not a current staff person at my church, where it was a very private conversation. And they said, they didn't make me promise confidentiality, but it was like, hey, I'm going to tell you something that I need you to, you know, not repeat, you know, something like that. And it involved some sin issues that were disqualifying from ministry, some very serious sin issues that had not been dealt with. And it put me in a very tough spot where this person is coming to me as I'm the boss, but I'm also the pastor. And they're confessing things that just by any standard would have disqualified them from ministry. And then what do I do about that? So I ended up having to take it to my personnel committee and just saying, okay, this person told me this, I have to let you guys know. So I would say, yeah, if somebody makes you promise confidentiality, you just got to be very careful. You may find yourself backed into a corner where you're in a lose-lose, you know, situation.
Be careful about making a promise until you hear something.
Exactly. You don't know the promise you're making. It's a blind promise, and you just have to be extraordinarily careful.
I think I've done that for the most part, and I can remember a few occasions where they chose not to tell me.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, and then you definitely didn't need to know. If it was something of that nature, then you're probably glad you don't know.
Probably so. All right. You mentioned this point, our third point. One mistake can cause a ripple effect with others. Expand on that.
Yeah. I would say this is when you breach confidentiality. If you mess up, everyone does. And, you know, part of confidentiality is knowing who to tell first, if it's, you know, something that you're going to share with maybe a handful of people. And, you know, when you make a mistake and you breach confidentiality, or you tell someone something that you should have told someone else first, it's a very quick ripple effect, because you've got text messages, you have emails, you have cell phones that make calls immediately.
Viral confidentiality.
It is very hard to get ahead of the text message. And I've told my church that many times, to say, one of my biggest struggles is, who do I tell first? Because the second I tell two or three people, well, then the world knows. So this ripple effect is very important. And the strategy as a leader to know, all right, I have six people I need to tell. And I can't get them all in the same room and tell them all at once. So who do I tell first? You have to think through that extraordinarily carefully, because I've had plenty of cases in my leadership where, you know, you're supposed to have confidentiality in a committee meeting or confidentiality in a deacon's meeting. And, you know, you walk out of the meeting, and before you even walk out of the meeting, the world knows, because somebody has forwarded the email, somebody has texted, and, you know, there are gatekeepers in the church, and then there are gate openers in the church. And once the gate openers get the information,
is that like gate open mouth?
Well, yeah, I'm trying to be nice, but the floodgates open is what happens. And, you know, everyone ends up, you know, group texts or, you know, I like group texts with Bible verses. I'm not a big fan of group texts with gossip, but it gets out, and it gets out fast. So be very cautious with that ripple effect. Ask the question.
I don't know why I'm thinking about this. I'm just thinking about the Rainer family group text. It's one of the strangest things I've ever seen.
Well, yeah, I just hope we never get a subpoena for our, for our personal group messages. No one would understand the jokes. No one.
The thing about it is, if we did get a subpoena, people would be going, huh?
Yeah, you know? They would be completely clueless. They're like, this family's insane.
And then every now and then your mom will come in and say, I don't understand.
That's because she's the sanctified one. Yes. No, I would say be careful who you tell, but also be careful the order in which you tell people. There's always going to be that one person that's more inclined to overshare.
I want you to expand on one more. Do not sacrifice confidence with one person to gain with a group of others.
Yeah, this is gets back to that idea of leverage. I know this about a specific person, and by telling others, I'm going to gain power or gain favor with another group. Don't ever sacrifice confidence with one person to gain favor or power with another group. That is you using your leadership, your position for self-serving purposes. And it is always wrong. As a pastor, as a church leader, you sometimes just have to bite your tongue, bite your lip. I've been in business meetings when somebody stands up and says something and, oh, you're biting your tongue, you're biting your lip, physically biting it, knowing that I know something about this person. And if I just share it, they're going to be shut down. Or I know something about
it.
What's that?
It's tempting. Isn't
it's
it?
Very tempting. Or I know something about someone else that would completely discredit, and I would look so good. I would look right. People would know that what I did was correct. But you can't. You can't sacrifice confidence in order to gain for yourself. So I would just say that is part of, if you want to be treated fairly, don't ever become a leader. Don't ever become a pastor, because you won't be. Fairness is not something, is not a goal of leadership. So you just got to bite your lip. You got to bite your tongue. Yeah. Don't sacrifice somebody else in order to gain with a group of people.
Now that is a quote worth remembering.
What's that?
The one about if you want to be treated fairly, don't ever be a leader.
Yeah. Well, you're never going to be treated fairly as a leader. If you're as the leader going around, if one of your phrases is, well, that's not fair, you're not a leader, and you don't need to be a leader. Yeah. You're always going to be treated unfairly as a leader. Always.
Yes. Yes. That one is worthy of remembering. I like that one. Going back, I said I wasn't going to give much detail, but this doesn't provide, it'll give hints to the nature of it. But I was talking about this mentoring situation, and I happened to mention the radical mentoring resource that is out there in the midst of this. But I was thinking about that mentoring situation, and I'll give a little more detail, because it'll pretty much tell people what was going on here. Break confidence when you're concerned about the person's safety. That is why the mentor broke the confidence of the mentee. Mm. He was seriously very much concerned about this person's safety, by what the person told him.
Yeah, if you think someone's going to harm themselves or harm somebody else, that is a cause. That's a case for breaking confidence. Somebody told you something, you do believe that, hey, they may harm themselves or potentially someone else. you have to report that, you have to get on the phone, you have to do what you can to prevent somebody from causing harm. And I know those are difficult cases, but they do happen. And you have to be willing to break confidence, and you have to be willing to face the consequences of that too. So that person or that family may not like you for quite some time. They may never like you again, but it is a time to break that confidentiality.
This final point, keep confidence even when it may hurt your reputation. Boy, is this not classic leadership principle? I mean, how many times in leadership as a pastor, as a CEO, as a leader of an organization, have we been attacked, and others as well, and we can respond and refute that attack right away, but in doing so, we break a confidence that we know we should keep. And, you know, you talk about speaking confidence when you're concerned about the other person's safety. Sometimes it can be our reputation that's on the line, and yet we don't speak because we have to keep confidence. I've been involved in litigation before where social media has gone after me, and all I would have to do is one tweet or one Facebook post, and I don't know if I would have exonerated myself in the eyes of the public, but I certainly would have defended myself better, but I couldn't because I was in a legal situation where I could not break a confidence. And even when the opposing side was the sum of those who are attacking me, it's tough for a leader, Sam. It's really tough.
Yeah, I see this a lot when pastors get fired, which has happened to me. And you want to get out there in the public forum and just vomit everything that you know in order to prop up your own reputation. And particularly this year in 2020, with COVID and the pandemic, a lot of churches, there's just been a rash of pastor firings, pastors being forced out, pastors being mistreated. And, you know, there's a part of you that just wants to, air all the dirty laundry and make sure that your reputation is protected, which the Bible says, you know, as pastors, we need to guard our reputation. But there's a fine line. In doing so, you harm a church. So sometimes you have to keep confidence, even though it may be a ding on your own reputation. I've seen that happen to me personally, where I wanted to protect a church and help a church and make sure that the church as a whole was protected, and it meant harm to my reputation. I've seen that of late with several other pastors that are my friends, that are not speaking publicly about something that they could. And really just drag people through the mud and make themselves look good. But they're saying, you know what, the church is more important. The bride of Christ is more important than my own reputation. So sometimes it means that you do have to keep confidence, even though your own career and your own reputation can be hurt. And that's hard. That's the idea of being a sacrificial servant as a leader. We serve first, we lead second.
The analogy to be carried too far, but Christ is the perfect example. I mean, he had all the opportunity in the world to defend himself at different points on the way to the cross. And yet he had a mission, and he was not going to hurt the world that he came to save by defending himself to get himself down from the cross.
Yeah, I think we reflect that sacrifice. We can't sacrifice in the same way that Jesus did. And I know that's not what you're saying, but and then there's the other side of that. You don't want to fall on your sword too much. There are times to defend yourself. There are times to speak up.
There's times to get riled up and get ready to go to battle.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There are cases when you should fight back, but you know, that's this last point that we're making. It's hard sometimes to know, when you should fight and when you should just bow out gracefully. But I would say that, you know, if it means protecting your church and the people that you love, sometimes it may mean, you know, keeping that confidence, even though it hurts your reputation.
For sure. And oh my goodness, we could go into all these types of leadership challenges. I mean, that's a book into itself. Why There Is Leadership Pain. There's a book idea for some of you out there.
Now, don't give too much away. That's one that I want to write.
Forget what I just said. Just
before our listeners take the idea and run with it.
Totally ignore it. Sam, this is very sage advice. thank you for going through that, especially from your pastoral perspective. But it's not limited to pastoral leadership. It's way, way beyond that. It's just leadership and integrity in general. Thank you, as always, to Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. They're serving the church by fulfilling the Great Commission. And of all their 40-degree programs, we are most excited about the 37-hour Master of Arts in Church Revitalization, because it's in partnership with Church Answers and our nonprofit Revitalize Network. We're partnering with Southeastern Seminary right now to make available the Church Future Indicator. You better grab it quickly, because it's about to go away. It's going to be replaced with something even more incredible, a new book out by Southeastern Seminary that deals with some critical issues in this post-quarantine era. So just get ready for it. And if you haven't already gotten the Church Future Indicator, grab it right now. Where are you going? Southeastern will help you get there. Thanks again for joining us today here on Rainer on Leadership. Make sure you listen to us and subscribe. iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, you know where you listen to us. And just subscribe there. Give us a rating and review as well, so that others can know and enjoy this podcast. And thank you for joining us online at churchanswers.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.